are very glad for all who have come to the meeting tonight again. They appreciate your presence and help and interest in the meeting. I ask you to remember the remaining nights, still 3 nights before us in the will of the Lord, and we'll be very glad if you can come back through until Friday evening. Now, our reading tonight is from, first of all, from the Psalm number 84, the book of Psalms, and Psalm number 84. How amiable are thy tabernacles, O Lord of hosts, my soul loveth, yea, even fainteth for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh crieth out for the living God. Yea, the sparrow hath found a house, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. Even thine altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. Blessed are they that dwell in thy house. They will be still praising thee, Selah. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, in whose heart are the ways of them, who passing through the valley of Baca make it a well. The rain also filleth the pools. They go from strength to strength. Every one of them in Zion appeareth before God. O Lord God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob, Selah. Behold, O God, our shield, and look upon the face of thine anointed, for a day in thy courts is better than a thousand. I had rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the man that trusteth in thee. Now, that will be our main reading, but I want to read another psalm from further over, 122. Psalm 122. If you just note verse 5 of Psalm 120. Woe is me that I sojourn in Mesach, that I dwell in the tents of Kedar. Now Psalm 122 and verse 1. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together, whither the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. For there are set thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls, and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sake, I will now say, peace be within thee, because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good. That will suffice for our reading from the scripture. I think probably that most are fairly well aware of what we are attempting to do from the meeting last night, but just in case any were not here, and we'll take just a couple of minutes and recap, get our bearings, and then come on to what we want to consider in the meeting tonight. We are going to take a look, and have already looked at one of them, what we call the Psalms of Zion, those psalms that are particularly devoted to the celebration of some of the precious features of the ancient city of Jerusalem. That city has gained its fame ever since the reign of David, and particularly from the reign of Solomon, as the place where Jehovah dwelt and manifested his presence, especially in the temple which Solomon erected. And because in ancient times it was a special testimony in the world, a special place on the face of this globe, there were many things associated with that place that are well worthy of note. And then we move from thinking of Solomon's temple in Jerusalem in ancient times we took a step over to think of New Testament assemblies, different companies that were gathered in the New Testament. And then we said we would move from there to a place called Dundonald. And during the meetings we would have what I have called the triangle of testimony, the things that were true of the ancient testimony of Jerusalem. Then the things that were true also of the testimonies in the New Testament. Then the things that should be true of testimony even to the present day. And the triangle keeps running through history, and God has some features that he wants to see reproduced in every age and in every place. Last night, we took a little look at Psalm 87, and we thought in that psalm of the position of Zion. It wasn't the biggest mountain in the land of Israel, but it was the mountain that the Lord selected, its position. We thought about its pictures, four pictures that we have in that psalm. A temple with a foundation, a family with many members, an orchestra all in tune, and a fountain for the spiritual refreshment of its inhabitants. So that's that. We'll not be going back. Those who were here, you don't want to hear all that again. Having looked at those things, the pictures and the position of Zion tonight, in the two psalms that we have read, and it'll be difficult to keep jumping between the two, and I think you may get lost somewhere in between. I'll try and focus mainly on what we read from Psalm 84. I want to think about something of the pilgrims of Zion and the privileges that were available in that ancient city and are available in God's assembly still. All of you know that it was an institution in Israel. It was a commandment, a decree given to them, that three times every year, the males should all come up to Jerusalem and appear before the Lord. And if things had been going as they should have been, you would have noticed that in those three occasions, just at the beginning of the agricultural year, the Feast of Passover and First Fruits and Unleavened Bread, and then in the middle of the agricultural year, and then at the end of the year, God said, I want you to drop your tool. And he said, converge upon Jerusalem and give me worship and give me praise and so on three times a year. If things had been what they should have been, I say, at those three junctures of every year, you would have seen the roads of Palestine filled with pilgrims. And they were all moving to the one place, and they were all moving with the one purpose, and they were a happy bath, anticipating the great conferences that would take place in the city of Zion and in association with the temple. Now, I'll be drawing some parallels. One of the things that, just to put it into plain language, one of the things that I'm mainly thinking about tonight is the importance of attending assembly meetings. And that might seem to be a very basic and a very simple thing, but really, that's one of the major points that I'm aiming at, the importance. Just as in old times, God felt it important that the people would come together. You say, why didn't he get the man to write the scriptures out and tell him to read the Bible at home? Well, God thought it was important that people would leave their home, and that they would come together and they would congregate in a central place. And there would be benefit from that fellowship and from that community. And just as God thought that was important then, it's important still. It's still his design that people should meet together in assembly fellowship and should enjoy the benefit of those congregations and those various meetings. Now, when we come to look at Psalm 84, I'll start with it first of all. The psalm is really divided into about three sections. We'll go through them. I'll just mention the broad outline and then we'll come back to one or two details. In the first few verses, the psalmist is expressing just his interest. He says, my soul longeth. Verse 2. My soul longeth and fainteth. He says, I would just love to be there. Now, he hasn't left home yet, but he's just He's just filled with the anticipation of what it's going to be like when he gets to Jerusalem. He was longing for it, and it was welling up within him, the anticipation of going. This was before he started out. That's the first few verses of the Psalm. Then when you get down to verse number 5, you read something like this: Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, and whose heart are the ways of them who, passing through the valley of Baca, make it a well. They go from strength to strength, every one of them in Zion appeareth. Now that part of the Psalm, he has left home, and he's on the way. And on the way between home and getting to Jerusalem, it's not always easy traveling. They go through this part that's called the Valley of Baca. But they keep going on. And they get over every difficulty, and they go from strength to strength, and at last it says they appear in Zion. So when you get down to about verse number 7, they have arrived. And when they get to Zion, what do they do? Well, verse number 8 says, O Lord of hosts, hear my prayer. And you have some of the prayers to the end of the psalm. Now I hope you can see the general story. A man before he leaves home, and he thinks of what it would be like to be there, he's full of anticipation and expectation. Then he starts out on the way, and he passes through many difficulties. We look at some of those. Then he actually arrives, and when he arrives, he spends the time in the holy exercise of prayer and praise. Now, you don't need to necessarily turn to it, because I'll not be developing it very much. But Psalm 122, that second psalm that we read, it just is very much the same. If you remember verse number 1 of that psalm, you read something like this: I was glad when they said, let us go up to the house of the Lord. Now, they haven't left home, but they're talking about it. And one says to another, do you know, it's time, it's soon be time to go to Jerusalem. And when the man thought of that, he was absolutely thrilled. He said, I was glad when the time came round that they said, it's time to go to Jerusalem. He's still at home. Then they go. Now there's not too much said about the journey in Psalm 122. I think verse number 2 tells us, our feet shall stand within thy gates. So they leave home. He's all delighted when the time comes. They leave home, and then they just get within sight of the city. Oh, he says, there it is. Our feet shall stand within thy gates. And then he gets inside, and he sees some of the wonderful things that are to be found inside Jerusalem. And when you get down to verse number 6 of Psalm 122, he says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. So you have really the same things repeated at home, then starting out, then on the way, then arriving, and engaged in prayer. So these are really two pilgrim psalms that depict the way to Zion. Now, so much for the general structure, you'll maybe not remember very much about that. We'll go back to Psalm 84, and I want to look at one or two simple practical things here. This first section, as I say, gives to us the pilgrim's passion. His passion. The second section will give us the pilgrim's path. The third one will give us the pilgrim's prayer. And I don't think we'll say very much about that tonight, because while I want to speak about the pilgrims of Zion and the privileges of Zion, on Thursday night I'm hoping to speak about the prayers of Zion and the praise of Zion. So, I'll not be touching much on the latter part of this particular psalm. How amiable are thy tabernacles? That's just the way he begins. He said there's something about that place that's just delightful. He didn't go because he just had to go. He went because he wanted to go. There was something about the place that captivated his affections. There was something about this place that captured his attention. And before he says anything, he just makes the exclamation in verse number 1, how amiable are thy tabernacles, O Lord of hosts. It's not altogether certain just what the word amiable means. He might be speaking about the beauty of the place. How beautiful are thy tabernacles, or how lovely. I maybe think that it's just as linked with that, but just a little taste different. And he's not just saying, how lovely are thy tabernacles, but he's saying, how lovable. There's something about this place that you couldn't help but love it. It just captures the attention and the affections. He develops that when you get into the next verse. And you couldn't help but read verse number 2 of Psalm 84 and not be impressed with the strength. He says, my soul longeth, even fainteth. My heart and my flesh crieth out. Now we'll spend a minute or two just with those words, because I'm wanting now to show that here's a man and his very heart. The deepest recesses of his heart, he said there's a longing. And he said that longing is so great that it nearly makes me sick. He says, I nearly faint. It takes over and I just can't stay away. He said, I can hardly wait until the time of the year comes round, until I get going up to Zion with the other pilgrims and to worship in the house of the Lord. I can hardly wait for it coming. And he said, I long for it and I'm pining away. And he said, there are times the feeling gets so strong. He says, I just burst and I cry out. If that's how a man felt about Jehovah's earthly temple, what I want to ask just now, how do you think we should feel about Jehovah's dwelling place now? Can you wait until the time of the meetings come round? Or maybe you say, well, you have no prayer meeting the night. That's not very like his attitude, sure it's not. He could hardly wait until the seasons came. He was just gripped with this intense desire, and he didn't go to meet with the other pilgrims in Jerusalem because it was a matter of duty. He went because it was a matter of delight. You know, I would love that we could recapture just something of the freshness of wanting to come to the meetings. That we can hardly wait. You get up on Tuesday morning, I don't know what the day nights are here, but you'll understand. When you get up on Tuesday morning and you say, get your senses gathered, you say, this is Tuesday. Oh, great, this is Bible reading day. And you're waking up on Thursday morning, oh great, this is prayer meeting day. You know, that's what it should be. If we were the spiritual people that we ought to be, there was no chance of this man missing a meeting. Oh, not a chance in the world. He longed for it. He fainted for it. He pined for it. He yearned for it. He cried out for it. Just like a parched piece of land would cry out for a shower of rain. He said, I need it. I cannot do without it. Tell me, you'll not think it's too practical, and you'll not think it's too ordinary. Can I ask you, do you have a passion for the meeting? Or is it just a... Is it a bore? Is it a drudgery? Many believers, you know, have stopped coming to the meetings because they feel there's nothing there. He not only gives those three words that show the intensity of his yearning for this place, but he adds three words that show that it touched his whole personality. In those same verses, he says, verse 2, my soul longeth. Then the next sentence, he says, my heart and my flesh crieth out for the living God. So you have his soul, and you have his heart, and you have his flesh. Therefore you say, sure, that's just a bit of repetition. Not quite. His flesh obviously refers to what he was physically. You know, there was a dear brother, I'll maybe say this first. The flesh was what he was physically, and there was heart and soul. That's obviously what the man is spiritually. Now he says, there'll have to be both there. He says, I'm going to be there in heart, and I'm going to be there in soul. But he says, I'm going to be there in body too. My flesh will be, the dear brother told me at the door last night he'd be with me tonight in spirit. But really it's no comfort to me. And I've not been hard on him. I would rather see his flesh here. And the man didn't just tell the people, now, you go to Zion now. Ah, lovely, it's a lovely place to go, and I've been thinking about you, I'll be with you in spirit, but I'll not be there. Oh, he says, my heart longs for it, and my soul longs for it, and he says, my flesh longs for it. You see, body and soul go together in this business. Oh, you'll not forget that. You know, there are believers. I would imagine Dundonald's a very strange place if there are some of them like this just around. I wouldn't know about them. But you know, they're likely dear saints associated with the assembly and their hearts just longing to be at the meetings, but their body won't allow them. They would love to be here. If it was a matter of the strength of their longing, in the spiritual sense, they would definitely be here, but they have weakness of body. It just doesn't work. Then there might be another category. Those people have the heart, but they don't have the body. You know, if I knew enough, and I could speak freely because you know that I don't know, I'd be far more concerned about people that have the body to be here, but no heart to be here. I don't know if there are any members in the assembly, nominal members, and they have physical strength, they have good memories, they have good sight, they have good hearing, they have mobile limbs, they have everything that you would need to come to a meeting. But you hardly ever see them at a Bible reading. You hardly ever see them at a prayer meeting. And you have to come to the conclusion it's not the want of body, it's the want of soul. It's the want of heart. I hope, brothers and sisters, and I know I'm speaking to people, we'll not be scolding you for the people that don't come, because you're here tonight, and we are glad to see you, but I hope when it comes to a meeting, that we put our heart, and we put our soul, and we put our very best in it. And as long as you're able to come, keep coming. Keep coming. Because the day might come, when we'd not be able to be there. It touched the whole of this man's being. What did he really want when he came to those meetings? And you say, it's lovely to meet the people. It is nice to meet the people. And it's lovely to look at the surroundings. You know, Jerusalem in those days must have been a marvelous city to go to. There must have been many wonderful sights that would have with great historical interest and things that had great stories could be told. But you know what he says? How amiable are thy tabernacles? He says, my heart and my flesh longeth for the courts of the living God. But he said, there's something a little bigger still. My heart and my flesh crieth out for the living God. Not a great thing. You know, one of the parts of meetings is to come and sing together. And there is a benefit with that. And another purpose of meetings is to come and meet each other. Now that must have been a very practical and real thing in these days when maybe people from different parts of the country never met until they arrived at the temple at these yearly pilgrimages. And it was certainly a great thing for them to meet together and to support each other with their fellowship and to rehearse the goodness of the Lord that they had known throughout the year. It's a great thing to meet each other. But remember, meetings should just be more than social occasions. You should get a touch of God. For the living God! I tell you that I go to meetings at times, and when all's said and done, I have to go away. And the singing wasn't too bad, you know. And the number wasn't too bad. There was quite a good number there. And everybody was friendly enough. But it was difficult just to get any detection of the presence of God. My flesh crieth out for the living God. Every time there's a meeting in Dundonald Hall and the Christians come together, it should bring us into contact with God. Oh, for the presence of God, the drab formality of going through the motion of meetings is absolutely useless and wearisome. It would be a great day if we could get the clock turned back and it were repeated with us, as it did happen in New Testament times, that people came in and they fell down compelled to acknowledge that God is in you. Here was a man wanted to feel the presence of God. It wasn't the beauty of the place, and it wasn't the multitude of the pilgrims. It was the possibility of fresh communion that just captivated his heart. Maybe if we had more of God at the meetings, people would come a little bit more freely. I don't know, but certainly that's what this man was looking for. That's what took him out. See, getting to meetings is a hard business. I was hear some of the brethren telling not so long ago that they were at a hall and there was an old lady came and she wasn't very mobile at all with her two walking sticks. And it took her about an hour of sailing along to the meeting. And there were only two other brethren there, I think, a very small place. And she always arrived about 20 minutes before the time. Not a bad practice, you know. If you have a heart in the meetings, you'll likely be there in good time. The brethren asked me to be simple and practical, so you blame them if you think I'm too down to earth. She was there about 20 minutes before the time, and it took her a long time of getting, and when it got to the end of the journey, she was just shuffling along very clumsily and slowly, and the brother asked her, this brother who was a visitor, he asked her, he said, how do you manage to keep coming to the meetings? And she said, I'll tell you the truth, she said, my heart gets there first. And she said, then my legs come about 20 minutes later. That's the thing. It's my heart, it's my soul, it's my flesh going to meet God. That was really the drawing power that made this man want to make the pilgrimage desire. He gives two little pictures in the next verse that further indicate his appreciation of this place. Two birds. He says in verse 3, the sparrow hath found a house, and the swallow a nest for herself where she may lay her young, even thine altars, my King and my God. Now there may be a couple of very simple little things here. The swallow and the sparrow, some little dispute has been whether these are actually the birds involved. But that we just keep it like that, a sparrow. You couldn't get any bird more ordinary. The sparrow has found a house for herself, just where she wants to stay. Someone has said about the sparrows, they're always fighting, but they're always there. And that's a bit like some of the dear Christians as well. They can be a little awkward, but it's good if they're always there. Great to be a sparrow in the assembly, you know, just to be there. Find a house. Come to stay. Come to roost. Come to rest. They'll be there every morning. Just a regular resident. That's just like a sparrow. The sparrow hath found a house. Now he doesn't say that the swallow has found a house because the swallow doesn't find a house. It just comes for a temporary period. The sparrow will stay there in January and it'll be there in July and it'll be there in December, but the swallow won't be there in all those months. Well, if the swallow didn't find a house, what did she find? She finds a nest that will just be enough for a season. Well, you say, does this mean that we're getting licensed to come to the meetings in the winter and fly away in summer, or to come in the summer and fly away in winter? Say that I'm not a sparrow, but I'm a swallow. Some of the Christians are more like swallows, you know. They're 2 or 3 months of the year you'd hardly ever see them. No, that's not what the writer said. He's saying, when it's a matter of the sparrow, I want to tell you that the sparrow has found a contentment and she's always there. But he said the swallow has found the sanctuary a good place for building a nest for bringing up her young. She finds that it's a great place for rearing the young bird. Now you, Lily, have anticipated what I want to say. I'm going to speak now about the young people. There aren't too many of them here tonight, so I can't speak to them. We just have to talk about them behind their back. I'm not saying anything bad because I belong to that noble generation. Don't be too hard on us because of... Well, I don't know about young people's meetings around here, but, you know, they're really a mistake. I'm not talking about children's meetings now. I'm not talking about that for little boys and girls. But young people's meetings are unnecessary. There's nothing to be compared with younger folks meeting with the older ones. You know, the swallow doesn't put a nest away somewhere and make a nest for herself somewhere else. When she's nourishing, and when she's rearing, and when she's nurturing the young swallows, she's with them all the time, and she hardly ever leaves, and she stays close by. And now this idea here, brother, having a meeting for old people and then having a meeting for young people somewhere else. Now listen, I'll say firmly, you may have a different outlook on it, but I'll say it's definitely not the way forward. There's nothing to be compared. If there are younger ones here and you want to know how you can develop spiritually now, and that's the thing. If you want to know how you can have a bit of a game or something, I don't know where you may go. But if you want to know how to develop spiritually, you make sure you're at the Bible reading every week. And make sure you're at the prayer meeting. And when the brethren are out at the open air meeting, you stand with them. And make sure that you don't miss the prayer meeting before the gospel meeting. And you bow your knee with the older brethren and sisters, or whatever posture they have. You always be involved with them. For the assembly's a great place for you. It will grant spiritual development. The man says the sparrow can find a home where she can stay all year. And he said this temple in Zion, this wonderful place, he said it's a suitable place where the swallow finds a nest for the rearing of her young. Now, those who are younger, you don't want to waste your life, you don't want to waste your time. I know it's not always easy. The thing that I commonly hear, and these things need to be faced, I'm not running away from them. The thing that I commonly hear is that we don't have any company. There's no company for our jaw. That's a slight upon the older believers. Because the best company that you could ever have would be older spiritual Christians. You use their company. You stay with them. I'll be honest, when I was just saved, indeed the man that spoke to me first about assembly fellowship, he's just passed into the presence of the Lord this morning. I remember well the night he drew up beside me just the evening after I came home from school. And he spoke a kindly little word and said, would you ever think about getting baptized? And you say, you shouldn't do that, wait till they come and ask you. Are you sure? He spoke, I was just little into my teens. And I was brought into the assembly. And in all those years, I can tell you that I enjoyed thoroughly the company of older believers. There was nobody just exactly my own age group. There were other. I found it to be an ideal place, just a nest. You know, a young bird, like the swallow's young brood, needs protection. And even though we think, those of us who have got our 4 A levels and our 10 O levels and our PhDs, even though we think we know it all, and these old fellows are just a kind of dopey just getting ready for the grave. Even though we think that, remember, it's not really like that. And the best way to get to know a little bit better is just to stay with them. It's an ideal environment for the bringing up, for the nourishment, and for the protection of young people. And the man said, I would just love to be there. He's thrilled. I have to move on from this section because, but I want to point this out and then I leave the other things in it. He's thrilled with the plurality of what's there. He says that how amiable are thy tabernacles, thy tabernacle too. He says, thy tabernacles. My flesh longeth for the court. No, he says, I'm just panting for the courts. Then a little verse down, verse number 3, he says, even thine altar. No, he pluralizes it again. He says, even thine altars. This man wanted the benefit of the copper altar. And he wanted the benefit of the golden altar. I can't really stay with that. We were speaking last night, you know, about the importance of sacrifice. One of the great features of God's assembly is that we cannot do without the brazen altar. That's the work of Christ. You couldn't have a gospel meeting without that. And I think you would have a little bit of trouble having a remembrance meeting without it. And you wouldn't manage too well in the prayer meeting without it, because we would have no access were it not for the blood of the altar. So you need the brazen altar. You need to appreciate the work of Christ. He said, I just love the value of atoning blood. But he said, I love the golden altar. The brazen altar is God coming out to me. The golden altar is me going into God. And here's a man wants to get to know God. And if he's going to get to know the living God, he needs both altars. Because that will cover the experience that he just wants. Now I think I'll have to leave that. I do want to say, before I go on, give a little word. I've been rhyming at it, you know, but it's just the burden of the meeting tonight. I want to speak about the importance of getting to the meeting. Again, maybe younger folks are not here. And some maybe that I'd really want to hear that. Now, it's not always easy. I know people get involved in employment and they can't get to meetings. Now, I'm going to make another bold statement. And I know that I'm right up against difficulties. And I'm practical enough and my feet enough on the ground to know that employment's very, very difficult in these days and you can't just pick and choose maybe the way it used to be. But I say this, do your best to get a job that lets you come to the assembly meeting. If it means £2,000 a year less, don't you even think twice about it. Make sure you get to the meeting. Now it's important. And one of the reasons that it is important is this. These men that wrote the Psalms, they were living in a very hostile environment. Later down this part of the psalm that we're not speaking about tonight, he says, I would rather have one day there than dwell in the tents of wickedness. Now he knew there were wicked tents. Places, you know. You notice when we come to read in Psalm 122, I was glad when they said, let us go up into the house of the Lord. You remember, I drew your attention to a verse back up in Psalm 120. He says, woe is me that I sojourn in Meshach, that I dwell in the tents of Kedar. And if you read Psalm 120, it'll speak about all the vicious language. And that seems to me as part of the setting. These men lived in difficult circumstances, maybe far, far removed from Jerusalem, and they were surrounded by all kinds of ungodly people. And they said, it's just a real tonic to get to Jerusalem. Now, some of you maybe that are university, and some of you brethren that work in places of public employment, sometimes the conversation's anything but healthy. And the things that go on. And remember, all I would say is this. that it's absolutely vital that you get away out of the environment of wickedness and be able to spend an hour, two or three times during the week, just in the fellowship of the Lord's people. It purifies your mind. It strengthens your soul. It clears away a great deal of the defilement that we hear in the ugly world outside. And it's absolutely essential for spiritual health. There's maybe someone here finding it difficult. Maybe there's someone in this meeting tonight making a decision in life about something. And you can see that your decision is going to mean that your attendance at the meetings will be impaired. And I hope that I'm not talking in riddles that I don't know about. I was involved a little bit in business, and there were one or two, or three or four or five or six little temptations. There were times that I could have had things, but it meant missing the prayer meeting for 6 months. I could go on talking, but that wouldn't do any good to you. Remember, it's vital. If we have a passion for this place, try and put it first and make ourselves available for the service of the sanctuary of God. We come into the second part of the psalm. Not now the passion for this place, but I want to think about the pilgrimage to the place. He tells us, verse number 5, blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, and whose heart are the ways of them, who passing through the valley of Baca make it a well. The rain also filleth the pools. They go from strength to strength. Every one of them appeareth in Zion before God. That's a difficult little section of the psalm. Now, it seems to me something like this, that between where the psalmist lived and Jerusalem, it wasn't just altogether an easy journey. And he said there are times to get to Jerusalem that they have to pass through this kind of a valley called the Valley of Baca. But he said, we still go. We don't let the Valley of Baca put us off. We're still there. You say, what does the Valley of Baca mean? Well, I'm going to take just what it says in the margin. I'm not 100% sure that this is exactly the meaning. It may be a play in words, but I'm going to use it just tonight. It says in the margin here, it means weeping, the Valley of Weeping. It may be, for all I know, that there are some Christians in the meeting tonight, and you're presently in this valley. If you're not in it now, I would be very sure that at some stage in your life you have been in it. Just the Valley of Weeping. It says about these people, these pilgrims to Zion, that when they are going through the Valley of Weeping, they make it a well. That is, they pass into some experience where there are tears. You know the storybook of some of the lives. In the meeting tonight, I say there are pages that are well marked with tears. Yet you're still at the meetings. You're still here. These people make it. They make it a fountain. Now, I haven't been very much in these valleys. So that's why I'm speaking with just a little bit of reserve. Some of you people have been. But I want to say this, if I can. What you make trial is the vital thing, not the experience of it. It's not just that these people pass through the valley, but it says when they were passing through the valley, they made it a fountain. It wasn't just the experience of the trial that made the difference, but it was their exercise during the trial. They made it. It wasn't that the Lord made it, but they made it a spring. When they were shedding their tears in one sense, it was also springing up a fountain of refreshment on the other. I know that there must be some here, and if you were speaking from where I am, you could tell of times that your life was mixed with tears. And at the same time, you've experienced something of the blessing
and the compensating presence of the Lord. You say that they turn back. That's the point that's in itself. Did they turn back? Did they say we'll give up and we'll not go? No. It says they go on from strength to strength. And every one of them appeareth, they actually arrive in Zion. What I'm getting at is this. There are some times that trials stop people coming to meetings. I have known believers, and things have overtaken them in life, and they've become bitter. They went into the valley of Baca, but they didn't make it a fountain. And they became withered, and they became bitter, and they became dried up, and they said, I'm not going back. But then there are others, it's altogether different with them. Even though they have difficulties, it seems to make them stronger. That's why it says in this verse, they go from strength to strength. So the difficulty that these folks have had, it has actually expanded them. They go from strength to strength, and they keep going on until at last they arrive at the goal that they anticipated. I don't know what problems some have had just to come to this meeting. Some of us find it very easy, and we have plenty of encouragement. Maybe there's a believer has come tonight and you have come from a home where you had very little encouragement to come. Maybe you're going back to a very difficult situation. I know a brother had to come to a morning meeting not so long ago, an early meeting, and he had to leave without his breakfast. His wife wasn't saved. You say, if I had those difficulties, I don't think I would come. Maybe I would be the same. But you see, the people in the psalm weren't like that. It says, they pass through the valley, the depressed valley. The Lord opens up a fountain in the midst of all their difficulties, and he gives them special strength, and they still keep going on. Maybe there's someone has come here with a heart full of depression. Maybe you're down in a valley. None of the believers know about it. All I can say is this. You still keep trusting God. And still keep in fellowship with the saints. And still keep coming to the meetings. And still keep going on. And what now seems to be a valley, in the mercy of God, could very shortly turn out to become a victory. They're not always in the valley. It says they pass through it. They pass into it. And they're in it for a while. In the midst of sorrow, they get a spring. There's a little verse, I can't take time to speak about it now, but it says, the rain also filleth the pools. Even though they have sorrows, there are times that the Lord gives them a little shower. Many have told me, I can't speak about it from personal experience, but they have told me that the happiest times of their Christian experience was the days when they had to go to the meetings with a struggle. And it cost them a good lot to be there. And they were so delighted to get there because they had this struggle in order to achieve it, that when they arrived at the meeting, it was just like a breath of heaven to them. And it gave them special strength. That's exactly what's being spoken about here. Pilgrims that have problems, but they keep pressing on. And eventually, at the end of the psalm, the part that we are not dealing with tonight, they eventually arrive at the place of prayer. I really say, I don't think I should say anything more. There's a good bit left. I've said enough to give you what's really upon my mind. Here's a man that had a passion for a place. And he wouldn't let problems keep him back from getting to it. A head cold would nearly do the most of us. Give us an excuse for staying at home. It would do that for me. I'm not complaining about you. Very little would keep us back. I hope the Lord will stir within our hearts a greater devotion and we'll become true pilgrims of Zion and appreciators of the... I was glad when they said, let us go up. I trust that some of that joy will be ours. Maybe I should tell you that having looked at Zion's position and Zion's picture last night, having looked at its pilgrims and its privileges tonight, tomorrow night in the will of God, if you get a minute and if you want to read it, I'll be reading Psalm 132 and Psalm 133. We'll be thinking of Zion's priorities and Zion's prosperities. And then on Thursday night, we'll think of Zion's prayer and Zion's praise. Friday night, Zion's perfection and Zion's protection. That will be back from some of the earlier Psalms, Psalm 48 and 49 and Psalm 50. But forget about that. Tomorrow night it will be Psalm 132 and 133. If you have time to take a look at those, it'll maybe give you a head start for tomorrow night's meeting. Shall we pray? Our Father, again we commit to Thee our meditations upon the Holy Scriptures. We thank Thee for all of Thy people that have been at the meeting tonight. We acknowledge, Lord, that we are dependent upon Thee for every blessing. We thank Thee for spiritual desires to come. We thank Thee for physical fitness to be here. And we look to Thee that Thou wilt add Thy blessing upon Thy word. We have been considering some of the problems of these ancient pilgrims, and yet we thank Thee for the grace and the fortitude and the perseverance that marked them to an earthly dwelling place. And we ask that Thou will give to us a greater passion for the spiritual privileges that we enjoy, and help us to press onward for Thy glory. We commend to Thee tonight some connected with the assembly here, and they are spending long days of sickness. We ask, Lord, that Thine help and Thy grace will be their portion. We have reminded our hearts of some of Thy people in sorrow. It seemed to be different this morning, and the clouds have gathered as the day passed by. We commit these to Thee for Thy comfort as well. We ask Thy parting blessing as now we sing and make our way home, and look to Thee for mercies, additional mercies, in later evenings, in the precious name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Just a verse of 465. Take the name of Jesus with you, child of sorrow and of woe. It will joy and comfort give you. Take it then where'er you go. I think one verse will do. We're just about the time. Verse 1 and the chorus of 465, and we may stand to sing.